oak bark, dandelion root. How much in the kettle? Just enough to wake the fruit. When do you pick it? After frost, before the rain. Clean hands, slow steps. Bring the wild home again. Out of the woods. Ooh. Into the brew.
Hello and welcome to Das Aktuelle Bier Studio. This time with the first of a new mini-series called Out of the Woods into the Brew. So, what is this all about? Essentially, it's about new methods, unusual ingredients, and whatever you can dig up. So, the first thing I dug up was to decide that I need help. So, and this is why I'm joined again today by Javier Tortosa, author of the book The Art of Brewing. And I'll be leaning heavily on his expertise today because he has already, well, quite extensive experience in foraging and brewing with foraged ingredients. So the goal of this is that we want to provide you today with a seasonal primer. So this is the first season, spring. So what we wanted to do today was to provide you with an insight into, well, what can you forage? What part of the plants can be usable? How can you use them? And how do you decide, well, where can I use it? Of course, this is all in relation to brewing. So we want to, well, help you make a beer with unusual ingredients and maybe stuff that you've never thought about. So, for example, I recently had a horseradish beer. So it had horseradish in it and it was amazing because it paired very well with the coconut in the beer. So, as I said, unusual ingredients, but it worked. Main expertise we are going to lean on today is the Brewer's Almanac, the Home Brewer's Almanac, which is this one. I'll be linking this in the show notes. And of course, Javier's book, The Art of Modern and Traditional Brewing, where you can also already find some recipes with unusual ingredients. So, and with that, I would like to welcome Javier. And I have seen that you have been busy again.
Yeah, thank you very much, Philip. Hello. Nice to be here and to have the opportunity to talk about one of my passions, inspire and brew beers with more creativity using unusual ingredients, as you said. I think it's important to think that beer has more than four ingredients. So it's important as well to know how to play with them, not only use it as an ingredient, because there are some health concerns as well that it's like a, it would be good actually to make a disclaimer here, Philip, because
yes,
it's like,
definitely.
Okay, everyone can use it as
So first of all, the disclaimer: when we talk about foraging, we're talking about taking wild plants. So first thing, respect nature, don't forage everything, so leave something for the plants to recover, especially when we are for example talking about tree bark. And only forage what you can safely discern and identify. Some of the plants that we are going to talk about today, although most of the ones that we're talking about today are safe, but there might be plants where you can easily have a mix up with the poisonous plant. So only use what you can safely identify. This is the main disclaimer. We're not responsible if you're doing bad stuff. We can also, we try to provide you with a safe overview. Also, when we have something that is similar, we are going to mention it. But the thing is, only take what you can safely identify. So, disclaimer end.
Yeah, so we were talking with Philip, like, okay, we could do that. And we found both that it could be really interesting. Actually, as he mentioned, there is this book from Aaron and Marika from Sketch Brewing in Illinois. I had the pleasure to meet them once in Catalonia here. And I love to go forage and also like brew with everything I can. And it's a good excuse to go with the family and forage ingredients and share time in nature. So it's wonderful later that you can evaluate the final result altogether and create community. Right. That's why in my book, there's a chapter called Brewing With. And in the introduction already mentions this, like it exists a wide range of different potential ingredients in the nature. But we need to think about how to use it. First of all, if they are dangerous or not, where to gather them, non-polluted areas, leave some for the animals as well, know how to prune different trees, if you are taking some material from them, not to damage them. But also, the important thing is not about the ingredient, it's how to use it and where to use it and how to dose it. And sometimes it's like, okay, it's not the same to make a tea, to make a decoction, to make an infusion, to make a tincture. And those are the main methods where we can use when proceeding to with brewing with some of them.
So I think my first big tip in this respect would be to, well, get yourself a good guidebook. So you have an idea about what plants are, for example, growing in Middle Europe. And also, because many of these guidebooks already have like, mention when you can mix them up with something poisonous. But that would be my first tip. Get yourself a good guidebook. In the two books we've mainly mentioned here, there are already recipes where you have tried and true recipes, and also those mentioned too when you can mix something up. So at least in the Homebrewers Almanac, because for example, when we're talking about sumac, there are already like distinctions between the American sumac and like the European sumac. So keep that in mind as well. So, but I think the first thing would be, okay, first, we need to say why we are starting maybe this late with this episode, because it is about spring. If we are going about the calendarial spring, this has already started in March. But the thing is, the real biological spring, it starts a bit later. So, for example, I would say the biological spring started like, yeah, end of March. Because in March, it's often very cold. So there are some plants that you can already gather in March, but there's not so much. But now you have like spring awakening, you have flowers, you have herbs, the trees start growing again. And this is like, yeah, now you can find the most stuff because like nature is waking up again, depending on where you live. So for example, I'm living in the south of Germany. Javier is living in Catalonia. For example, he has already some of the stuff that I don't have already. For example, the dandelions just came out in my neck of the woods. Or you already had like pine cones, fresh pine cones. I don't have those yet. So always keep in mind that depending on where you live, the season might start earlier or later. So, but essentially, what can you forage? For example, when you're talking about herbs, we need to distinguish between the flower and the leaves, and also, in some cases, the roots. Because in some cases, you can use everything. In some cases, you can, for example, use the foliage or the leaves, but they won't give a good taste. So it's rather more sensible to use the flowers, for example. Dill would be, for example, such an example, because dill flower gives a way more subtle aroma than the leaves, because the leaves also, yeah, they provide something vegetal. That would be an example where the flower and the leaves, they don't both have the taste, but sometimes they have different bite tastes. So, and of course, we will also be talking about trees, because you can also use various parts of the tree. So normally you would use the bark. So that is essentially dead tree skin. So normally the tree doesn't need it anymore, but nevertheless, you should be careful when you forage for that. You can also tap trees. So for example, you can tap walnuts, you can tap birch. Birch is like the most prominent example, but I don't know whether, I think the tapping season starts a bit later. So Javier, you might know more about that because tapping birch is very prominent in Latvia, isn't it?
Yeah, usually March you can start tapping them. So yeah, this is quite usual that you have some birch here in Catalonia. For example, we don't have birch. You need to go high in the mountains, but in north of Spain, yes, we do. And a lot of people, just they tap it and you can get a lot of sap in one day, actually, yeah. And this sap is, well, you can use it for several purposes. I mean, in the book, I'm also talking about that because it's pretty common to use it as a brewing liquor. You need to keep in mind that it gets sour really fast. So actually, you can use it for a sour beer. I mean, already to embrace that it will gonna get like this. There are many ways to use birch and its different parts, like the bark and the leaves. But the sap definitely is one of them that if you can use, it's okay, I must say. It's not my favorite thing to do because I prefer to drink it straight and to get benefits of the probiotics and different things that can contain, right? If you boil it later, you lose kind of this. But again, this gives us the perfect excuse to also, okay, what do we use? Everything that we can, or we follow a purpose, yeah, right? It's like I would like to distinguish between potential ingredients, also ingredients that have been used traditionally in brewing, like one now, it's funny, no? Because now we are using as a substitute of hops. But before it was the other way around. It was like hops came later and then they were used in brewing, right? But mostly all of these ingredients are, some of them are bitter herbs to counterpart the sweetness of the malt, some of them. Other ones, they kind of go together and enhance this sweetness or floral things. And some of them, they were used as protection. Like, Philip, you were mentioning the oak bark, for example, or bark of the trees that have a lot of tannins. And it was even like a milled into flour and mixed with the malt to provide some tannins and give some protection against souring. So this is a cool context as well. Which herbs are you using, or you are taking a modern or more fancy like approach, like dandelion, for example, the leaves, right? Is not a traditionally brewing ingredient, but in my book also there is a recipe with dandelion. You can use the leaves, the roots, roasting the roots and the leaves and a different parts of the brewing process. So this is also one thing that I think we're going to talk today, when and where and how much you can add in one brewing.
Yeah, of course. So I think the first thing is like to decide what kind of flower or tree you're going to use and what do you want to impart into your beer. Do you want a certain kind of aroma? Are you looking for astringencies or tannins or whatnot? Or maybe do you only want the color? For example, in the case of some flowers, you can easily, or also fruit, you can also leach the color into the beer once you have some alcohol. For example, I remember when I did a beer with raspberries. So I remember putting them in when they were red, and I remember taking them out and they were like, well, they had like the color of a water corpse because all of the color had leached out, and it imparted a very nice rose color to the beer.
No, sorry, it's like I'm thinking there is such a wide possibilities here. It's almost endless. And we, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to kind of choose different ones that work. And as you said, I mean, everyone living in different parts of the planet, they can have another suggestions. But I think this can inspire like ingredients that we don't know because we don't have around or something, or we are not aware of them. And we would like also like to share and also to receive some info.
Why not? Definitely. So if you have any info for us, so about stuff that you have brewed with, just DM us on Instagram with both on Instagram. You can also write me an email. You can also send a speech message via the website. So tell us about your experiences when you have used something unusual, be it foraged or bought. Yeah, but the thing is, essentially, first you need to, well, I think the first thing also is that you need to discover what is actually growing in your area. And then you can, well, then you can decide what to use and how. Because, and this is the perfect excuse to go out and explore. For example, when you have like an herb that needs, a creek, so it's growing near water, find out where your nearest creek is, where maybe not there's too much agriculture, especially when it's concerning pigs or something. Go into the woods, find out what's growing there. For example, I had the pleasure that I went to the nearest lake and there were a lot of blackberry bushes. So, and they had just recently begun growing new leaves. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more later. But definitely that was an absolute pleasure because it was all that just there for the taking. There was a massive abundance. And as everyone knows, blackberry is, well, they're sturdy.
Yeah, also, it's like it would be interesting to talk about how to process this this material once you have foraged it. I mean, how to dry it or freeze it or you know, because potentially you can extract different things if you are freezing them or something. Also, I talk about this in the book. So some things I prefer to freeze dry, another ones to dry in the sun, or some in the oven, or boost a little bit, like giving a hint of heat before adding it to into the brew. So also there are, you see, I mean, you are talking about one ingredient, but also time of recollection. I mean, we're going to talk about dandelion, right? So I'm not spoiling anything. Okay, I will wait.
No. Yeah, the thing is also some of the stuff you can ferment. We are going to talk about this later as well, because you can... there's some stuff that you can use fresh, but also gets another kind of aroma when you ferment it. So because it changes a bit, so makes it maybe more approachable. You also mentioned, for example, well, when the last time we talked, we were also talking about acorns. So these take a long time to ferment. But essentially, what I wanted to get to, we chose to bring into this episode each of us five plants that grow in our areas. So in my case, there are some unknowns. I know what properties they have. I know what beers might benefit from it. But for me, it's already a bit more of discovery. So some of the stuff I need to try out first. So, but coming back to what we want to get out of it. So there is some stuff that you can do to test it. I mean, first and foremost would be to taste the different parts. You can, for example, try and taste the flower. You can try and taste the leaves. Maybe not just bite into the root, depending on what you're foraging. So that would be the first and easiest test to see, okay, what does it bring? There's a lot of online resources also about wild herbs and how they are chased, how they do chased, and also in what kind of dishes you can use them. So there you can also get some knowledge about what, for example, what kind of herbs you can forage and there which would be safe to eat. Interestingly, very often they mention a minty flavor. So that seems to be a plant metabolite that's very common. So the minty flavor.
Yeah, minty flavor goes really well with sour beers, with a little bit high carb beers because it enhances the refreshment feeling. So
yeah, so of course, very often we have to take into account because in former times people used to eat also way more herbs, and they are normally a bit more intense in flavor, but mostly they tend to be a bit more bitter. So astringency is something that you can get very easily out of herbs or bark. Because as we've mentioned, for example, when we are talking about oak, it contains a lot of tannins. So it might be that some of the plants we're talking about might spread over several seasons because, well, some of them are all year round. But for example, in the case of flowers, you might only get them at a certain part of the year. But for example, roots you can get all year round.
Yeah, totally. I mean, regarding tannins, I mean, when designing a recipe, you need to keep in mind that tannins help precipitate protein. So if you are brewing a hazy beer and you add this ingredient, like a rich tannins ingredient, what will happen inside the fermenter or inside the bottle or inside the can is like all the tannins will bind the proteins, will precipitate into the beer. And then when you are pouring it into a glass, this is not the best experience. So it's really ugly. That doesn't mean that it's not tasty, but if you're intending to sell that beer commercially or something, that would not be a good idea. So if you are adding ingredients that contain a lot of tannins, I recommend you to brew with low protein content, or try to get rid of the protein by boiling first, but definitely not to go for a hazy IPA or something like this.
But maybe a clear pilsner.
No, I'm telling you because it had happened to me, you know, and it's like, people emailing me, is this normal? No, it's not normal. So,
what would be some other methods where you can, like, for example, find out what properties your herbs or bark or whatnot might provide? You can also, you can do a kind of an analog hot steep method. Well, you prepare some liquor. You, put your leaves or your bark in there. You let it sit for a bit and then you try and taste whether it has changed. I would recommend doing like two batches there. So because human chemosensation, so taste and olfaction, we can very easily detect changes. But if you just have a single vessel with your brewing liquor and you put this in, you might not immediately notice the change because you need something to compare it to. So you need like the clean brewing liquor and then the modified brewing liquor so that you might, because it might only be a subtle difference, but this will help you spot it. I mean, if, for example, when you have something like this, you need to keep this in mind that you need something to compare it to because you want to spot the difference. You want to know what your new ingredient provides. And this is why you have to use something that you can compare it to. I mean, for example, if you prepare a tincture, so you put essentially your plant material in liquor, hard liquor. So like, for example, vodka. This is normally more easy because everyone knows how vodka tastes or not, depending on drinking habits. But essentially, it's quite clean. And so you can easily see what normally your plant material provides, either color or taste. So, and this would be like the three most common methods where you can estimate what flavors, aromas your ingredients might bring to your beer. So first and foremost, taste it only when it's safe. Don't forget the modified hot steep method and of course the tincture. Some material might gain when you dry it, because depending on what kind of material you use, for example, when you use leaves or fresh plant material, it might benefit from drying. Because there's going to be a lot of water in it, which might dilute the taste. And it's also going to help when you use it as dry material, for example, in the brewing liquor, because it might leach the ingredients out better.
Yeah, also, I mean, if you are using like berries, for example, I mean, think about it twice, because berries has a lot of water. So you are expecting a OG and then you're getting another one. So yes, this needs to happen at least once to every brewer to notice and then think, okay, I need to pump it up to later like a kind of make a buffer for this dilution that is going to happen.
Because then you might need to up on the priming sugar.
Yeah, or boil. Yeah, boil it more time and then you are out of this.
Yeah, well, definitely keep in mind. Also, as you're talking about berries, for example, freezing also helps to break down the cell walls so that these berries might impart their flavor better to your brewing liquor. So you can also get freeze-dried berries. There you get rid of the water. They have been modified already. They tend to be a bit more expensive than a fresh material, which you can freeze. Just keep it in mind. Because, you might screw up your OG. You're maybe shooting for a 6%er, and depending on the amount of material you put in, you might get like a 5.5er, and you're wondering, where's my alcohol gone? So, but something that we have not talked about it yet, because as it's flowering time, there's also a lot of bees going around. And if we're talking about wild beers, so where do yeasts live? Wild yeasts. They're living on fruits, they're living in bees, and as they're living in bees, you can also find them on flowers. As long as the plant is not auto-flowering and doesn't need a bee, for example.
You can use a bee if it's dead from the panel. It will give some propolis, will give some venom. everything counts. And boost your immune system. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but using just a bee, it might be better to produce a starter first. Yeah, but essentially, what you can also use is like you pick some fresh flowers, you put them into brewing liquor. This was what you just suggested, wasn't it, Javier? And then you can do like a wild inoculation.
Yeah, totally. I mean, insects are like the most important vectors of carrying microorganisms. So why to prepare a cool ship, in an area that we are not leaving everyone next to the Sena River, right? So
yeah,
sometimes we're thinking, okay, I'm just put the word out and it's gonna be magic and it's gonna be awesome. No, the reality is that no. I mean, I think that I do the analogy in the book, like it's like when you are trying to hire someone and you are the HR. So you need to interview different candidates. So the smart thing here also if you're going to brew 1,000 liters, don't play only like, okay, I'm going to put all the batch outside and see what happens. This is beautiful, yes, but if you have some commercial like interests, probably what it works better is like to try to distribute like a few liters of this wort in different areas so you get different things. Or this is an aerial trap of microorganisms, but better you can do a mash trap of microorganisms. I mean, you can select some flowers, select some skin from apples or from juniper galbulae, and then you build your profile and then you decide which one of the four that you have inoculated differently is your candidate, and then you just will use the potential, the one that has more potential for your beer. And this is a good one because I have seen people like trying to use a cool ship in winter, freezing winter. I was thinking, okay, probably now is not the best moment to get microorganisms from the air, right? I mean, sometimes we rely on a method, but we don't think that if it's the best moment or not. Think about that, like traditionally in Scandinavia and Northern Europe, people were taking a towel and soaking it with or sprinkling it with rye flour, and then they just put it on the floor overnight. And then they were getting the yeast that had more strength because was in summer solstice. Summer solstice for paganism is a high energy moment that was used, for example, to gather plants, to harvest the yeast. And all these yeast and ingredients will give this peak of energy to the ones that were like consuming them. So imagine one of the peak or even the water from the river, it will contain much more microorganism as at this moment. So if you want to be more also romantic and add more context to your beers, you can think about that as well. When to gather or forage your ingredients.
The thing is, It's not necessarily spring, but the thing is, for example, a very good example is that you also don't need fresh fruit. Because, for example, how do you do a sourdough starter? Very often you use organically organic raisins.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we said, very many microorganisms live on the skin of fruits. So, for example, if you have a vineyard in your area, where you don't have which is organically cultivated, you can get just some of the leftovers also for, a mash trap.
Yeah, totally. Did I tell you that one friend of mine from Romania, he gave me, sorry, a little break. He gave me some grapes because his grandpa made wine and grandpa also. And then I asked him, okay, bring me some sample from that because. And then I was brewing with that yeast. I thought it would gonna be like a contaminated sample or something. I put it under the microscope and I checked. It was only saccharomyces, but I didn't see any bacteria or anything like this. So I decided to brew one batch with that is kind of wild grape skin yeast. And I was brewing 100% barley beer. And then when I was tasting it, I was thinking, what? This totally tastes like a waste beer. But I was thinking, probably I put the label wrong, because here is I may have used some bread yeast or something. And no, that yeast, it produces a beer that is really, really, really interesting. And it may release a lot of killer factors because it doesn't get sour. Probably I hit the jackpot, but it's like this. I mean, if you don't try, you don't get. And recently I read also one paper from Japan. The one guy was saying the same. They took some yeast from the grapes and without adding wheat, they were getting flavors like a resemble to waste beer. So it's the same that happened to me. So probably if you're playing like this to do this HR interviews, you can even get your own brewing culture to brew some specific beers, and this is really nice.
It is, for example, also in my area there are very many communal fruit trees and also communal orchards where you can also get like some of the fruit for free where it's allowed. Also, you might also be able to get some bark or branches or leaves when they are going on about cutting. For example, tree cuttings is something that you can do in February and March. So you might be able to get some branches as well.
Nice.
Spring is the time of year in Germany where people cut their trees back. So this is like the prime season where you can get some branches and bark. All right, so five plants. The thing is, I'll be trying to provide detailed, well, I would say resources on the website. It might take me some days. I hope I have it ready to at the time where this episode goes live. But nevertheless, I'll try to provide a resume for each of the plants, plus, good web resources where you can have maybe more pictures to look at, and good pictures where you can, that will help you easily identify the plants. Ah, we forgot. You can also do something else with your plants. So you can either do hot steep, you can do a tincture, you can dry it, you can freeze it, but for example, with dandelion, you can also do a syrup. Because, for example, this is something that you can very easily do with dandelion flowers because they give a lot of aroma. And, for example, my wife does some kind of, she calls it dandelion honey. But essentially, she flavors the water with dandelion flowers and then boils it down with a lot of sugar. And it gets this very syrupy, honey-like consistency. And it's very close to the original, depending on what kind of honey you're into. So this is something where you can not only add flavor, but maybe also boost your OG.
Yeah. Actually, instead of adding sugar, because this is a traditional method as well, when you are brewing the first and main beer, you are adding lautering a second time with more beer, like party guiling, but this comes from there. To get the last drop of sugar, I mean, to the second beer or the third one that they were brewing, they were adding or honey or sugar. So adding a syrup would be really good because you're adding two things. Yeah. In a way of fortifying that beer. So,
yes. Yeah, definitely. So, another thing would be that you also, when you have decided what kind of plant you want to use and what you want to get out of it, you of course have to think about on where to add it in your brewing process. Do you add it during mashing? Do you add it during the boil? Do you add it at flame out? Do you maybe use it on the cold side? So depending on what you want to get out of it, you need to decide. For the finer aromas, it might be better when you add it on the cold side. Then, of course, you need to prepare it in some kind of way so that you, well, if you're not shooting for a sour beer, you might to prepare it a bit so it stays clean. That, of course, very often that means you can just freeze it, because freeze it will kill most of the bacteria and yeast that are living on it. So this is quite safe. This would also work, for example, for leaves, if you want to get something out of leaves. Essentially, everything else means that you have prepared it in some kind of way anyway. If you know you can add it during the mashing or the boiling process, this is going to be safe anyways. And when you use it at flame out, everything above 70 degrees Celsius, you can consider still to be safe. But when you're going way more below, you, of course, need to think about it. Is that what I'm going to add safe for my beer if I don't want a sour beer? Yeah, that would be my take on it. Do you have anything to add?
I usually soak it in alcohol first, like a vodka or some. Depends. If it's a stout, I try to use whiskey or brandy or something like this, or rum even. But you don't need to have it for long. I usually do it the night before, and I just cover it, so I don't use a lot of alcohol, just for sterilizing, and then boom, I add it the next day in kind of a dry hopping or dry whatever the plant you're using or something. This method I really like. If it's, of course, some kind of tomato or berry, or even paprika or chili, what I do is I steam it a bit, or I put it in the oven a little bit as well, because this benefits a little bit. It boosts the taste a bit as well, and then I add it into fermenter, into the cold side. But it boosts really aroma in tomato and paprika. Is really cool.
Well, as you already said, you also need to decide on the style you want to brew with it. Because if you're not shooting for age astringency, some of the flavors that might be imparted are, of course, subtle. So if your malt body is too strong, it might just overpower it. So this is where you need to think about dosage. And, of course, on the style that might best complement your beer. So, for example, the first flower, the first plant I'm going to mention, I know the aroma profile, but I personally think it's very subtle. So I wouldn't use it for stout or something with a very heavy, dark malt body. So, and having said that, I think we can go into the first plants. Yeah, well, so spring. What the first, at least in Germany, the first, plants of spring that you can already gather also during winter would be hazelnut flowers, or Haselkätzchen in German. So these are like the flowers of the hazelnut bush or tree, depending on how it's cut. So, but these are those very long, pale yellow flowers. I have tried them at the end of, February, starting of March. So they were already open. They are very astringent and slightly nutty, so it has kind of a walnut flavor as well. So, but it, essentially the tannins from the walnut. And the thing is, I have used it as a tea so far, simple tea bag, full to the brim, hot water. It gave astringency, but the flavor was very, very subtle. So this is, for example, something that I would say maybe a brown ale would benefit from it. Maybe also you can just try it in a pale ale, depending on how, well, if you say you don't want too strong of a flavor, maybe it should be, well, also light beer. But this is something that you can very easily use. The thing is, I am thinking whether to use them in a tincture as well, because when you gather them at the, well, beginning of March, I said they're already, many of them are quite open. So they're, because when I tried them, I had some that were also chock full of pollen. So I left a bit of a dry mouth. when you gather them earlier, they're still close. They're also supposedly a very good source of vitamin C, but what isn't? this might also be that, it could be that they're a bit more astringent then. So as I said, I gathered them at the end, almost of the flowering period. So it could be that they are kind of spent by then. Yeah, so what you can also gather in spring is, for example, yarrow or Schafgarbe in German. So this is something you have brewed with, where we can use the leaves. So, and you mostly use it as a hop substitute.
Yeah, bueno, yarrow is called Valhumal in Icelandic, I think, which is wild hop. And it shows that it was used like a substitute because it is very bitter. So it's really perfect to counteract the sweetness of the malt. But it depends really the moment where you are foraging yarrow. We are talking mainly about spring now, but it changes the profile as summer goes on. It gets more and more bitter. So what I recommend you here is like, what I do in the book, you have two recipes with yarrow. And it's one with for a pale beer, another one for a porter. And it is one of my favorite ones because it's like you can use the leaves, for example, for bitterness. But then later in the knockout, you can turn off the sort of heat source, for example, and add the flowers. And it's an example of what we were talking before. It's like a same plant, but you are using wisely different parts of it in the same recipe. Also, if you don't know how strong it is, you can prepare a tea first and or kind of a bench test. You can add a bit and taste the profile that will give that beer, and then evaluate a bit how much it will impart. Of course, less is more always. So I recommend you to start from really low and then go up. But yarrow is easy, really easy to use, and is great. Even if you are brewing a raw ale, you can add it as a filter, and then just mash on top, and then you will get a really cool herbal stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you want to brew a sour beer, as we discussed before, I mean, but I'm not sure if flowers are yet in spring. So early, no. So now, mostly in different latitudes, you can get the leaves. But anyways, I have my yarrow always ready. I take always the flowers. So with this, is just they're dry now. So like air dried. So I can use it whenever I want. But yes, I recommend you to first brew a tea normally with water, and then you will see the water the profile mm-hmm. of that would impart to the beer.
The thing is, if you don't want to go forage and want someone to do it for you, you can also, for example, you can also get this as a commercial tea. Mm-hmm. So you might get it from a pharmacy, also from the supermarket, but yarrow you can get easily as a tea. So this would also be, for example, a possibility if you live in a more urban area where you don't have so much nature, but nevertheless, we would recommend that you go out and explore nature. But some of the stuff we're talking about, you can already get, ready-made and safe. So because somebody has done the the work of identifying it for you.
You don't want to die with a white like a smile. Don't mix it with Darnell. So
yeah. So the next two that I was going to mention, I know they're edible, but I don't know whether they're going to do very much for your beer. Because, for example, there would be Gundermann, which is Grechoma hederacea. It is a very common herb in Germany, especially now. And it has a very distinct leaf style, and it's supposed to be bitter and minty. So I have seen recipes where they prepare it with dark chocolate. So essentially, Pullman's After Eight. Yeah, well, it might be that it does something for your beer, but I must admit, I don't have an idea how to incorporate it yet into a beer and how. So I guess I would try maybe ferment it, because that might bring something out in it. Also, maybe also a tincture. And the next one would be Veronica Persica, which is also a very, very common meadow flower, and you can definitely use it for a tea. And also this brings astringency, and it's supposed to taste a little bit like peppermint. But those are, of course, very, very small herbs, so you might have to gather a lot. The next one where we agreed both on it was dandelion, because you can get the, you can now, essentially now is April 15th. So now you can definitely get flowers, because the first ones are peeking out the head here right now. And of course, you can also use the leaves and the roots. The roots, as we already mentioned, you need to roast a bit so they get more flavor. The flowers you can use for an infusion, for example. So you might prepare your brewing water with it. And well, the same goes for the leaves, I think.
Yeah, I already have mine. So from this year, they're sun-dried. So this you can use to brew kind of 10, 15 liters, depending on the boost you want. This is a dry and roasted root on the dandelion. So then the only thing I need to do is to grind it into powder, and then I usually add it in the middle of the boil, more or less, to boil 30 minutes or something like this, in a porter. In a pail, normally I don't use because I don't want the roasted flavor, right? And then I have a lot of leaves. And also with dandelion, I think that it benefits to brew kind of a Scottish ale or something a little bit more alcoholic, right? Because it gives this sweetness that is kind of almost a... Some Belgian beer can go really, really good with that. But also keep in mind that dandelion leaves are edible. You can use them in the salad. And when you are foraging it, if you don't want to be them very astringent or bitter, you need to choose the leaves that are the youngest. But also it's very easy to evaluate this, because you can just wash it and taste it. You can achieve a lot of IBU using dandelion flowers. You have one recipe also in the book for a strong dandelion ale. You can get some tips how to use it, but also yarrow and this one. Imagine one thing that sometimes we don't think about. We are foraging our plants next to a path. You have a lot of neighbors that have a dog. Normally it's their preferred place to be. So I recommend you to, when you are foraging your plants, just wash it with water, rinse it with water to remove all of this. Or if not, go a little bit more to a more suitable place.
Because also in regards to parasites, there is in Germany, there is a parasite that is mainly a home. Well, there is mainly a parasite for foxes, but humans can also get it. And it's quite serious. Illness that you can develop from that. But the thing is, if you are picking your stuff above the certain height, and also if you wash it properly, also depending on what time in the brewing process you use, you minimize the risk of infection very much. The funny thing was, when I was researching for the episode, I found an article about someone who is foraging a lot, and he was essentially tackling that question: can you get that parasite from foraging? I'll put it in the show notes. And essentially he said, well, most people get it from hunting, not necessarily from foraging.
Yeah, here in Spain, we don't have a lot of ticks that carry encephalitis or Lyme disease. But if you go to Poland, Lithuania, Sweden, or Latvia, Lithuania, yeah, you need to check yourself. You need to check your
pets, definitely,
all the time. So also keep in mind this. If they end up in the brewing kettle, I mean, probably you get more protein, but nothing else. But if there is dog pee inside, probably is not very
tasty.
Very catty will be, or doggy smell.
Well, we're not doing the Simpsons beer. We need to add more dogs.
Yes.
Yeah. So the next thing was kind of an eye-opener for me, because I just recently had a session beer flavored with tea. So it's the tea beer from Pilgrim in Switzerland. And the base beer is essentially a wheat beer. So it's like a wheat bock. And it was flavored with peppermint and black tea. And I must admit, I did not see this coming when I tried and tasted it. Well, I had thought, well, okay, it's a bock. I had tasted like the original bock beer. Well, I thought, black tea, what can you get from it? Some bitterness. Because I must admit, I'm not the biggest fan of black tea. I'm a coffee man, so tea is something that, like an emergency fallback. So I'm not too much into black tea. But the thing is, it was amazing how well the peppermint and the black tea complemented the wheat notes. So I was amazed. So I was reminded of a kind of hibiscus flavored beverage, but so it was simply amazing. So I was really, really surprised on how well these aromas from different spectrums work together. So, and this is why the next thing I would like to add, because if you're lucky, you can get them in quite the abundance, is blackberry leaves. So rubus. So the good thing is, the only thing you can normally mix them up with is raspberries. And the good thing is, both are safe. So you might get not the flavor out of it you want, but both are safe. And well, essentially, blackberries are very, very easy to identify. Not only because you'll know there's a lot of thorns. So, but for example, you can take the young leaves there, that they have only very soft thorns. And you can already use them fresh. I would recommend picking those that don't have too many fungus infections. So pick clean leaves. The good thing is, for example, right now in spring, there's a lot of water stems. So they sprout like crazy. These are all fresh leaves. They're also very soft. They have soft thorns. You can easily get them. So the plant won't mind. Because normally where you find blackberries, there's a lot of it. You can just go from bush to bush, pick some of the water stems there, and you're golden. So you don't hurt any single plant too much. So, and the thing is, you can use them fresh. They impart a very, very, they impart a light black tea flavor. But what you can also do with them is that you ferment them. So what you do is, you pick them, you rinse them. You need something like a cotton flag or something like that, so where you can spread them on, and they which is also a bit moisture resistant. Then, but before you put them on the cotton, you first crush them with a rolling pin, so to break up the cell walls. Then you put them onto the cotton, and then you spray them with a little bit of water. You pack them in an airtight container, you control them every day, and this is something where I was already surprised, because the smell that they produce while fermenting is very intense. There's this very, very intense rose or flowery-like smell That in itself was really amazing. So, and essentially, then you wait until all of them have fermented. They turn from, well, green to black, essentially. You need to check for mold or fungus, of course, every now and then. So be careful with the water. It just needs a little bit of moisture for fermentation, not too much. So essentially, those you can also get ready-made. When you ferment blackberry leaves, they are supposed to be like a very good black tea substitute. So this is something that you, depending on where you live, you can very, very easily forage in a very big amount. So it took me like 15 minutes and I had like a bag this full. So of course, keep in mind, this bag of leaves then goes down to such an amount when you lose the volume and water.
Yeah, and also raspberry leaves, like blueberry leaves, like they help regulate blood sugar. So
I was talking about blackberry. So just so we don't mix them up.
Sorry, yes, but yeah, that was cool because then people will not mix again.
Yeah, so that was like this was like a very interesting revelation to me because I had never thought about blackberry leaves about gathering before, and so this is something that I want to definitely try out, like taking a weak wheat beer or a Portugal bock, and then adding those leaves to it and see whether I might, and well, for the peppermint I just might use the other herbs that I mentioned, like the Gundermann or something like that, where it just adds some very subtle peppermint aroma. But you see, this is the good thing when you start this. You start to think about things. Yeah, and how you get creative. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole point that about that chapter in the book. Actually, dandelion, for example, is not a traditional brewing herb. But raspberries and blackberries, like stems, for example, and its leaves, it has used in Lithuania, for example, for the filter. So actually, there is one brewery in Panevėžys in Lithuania that has one beer brewed with them. And it imparts some color as well and some taste. So yeah.
So there we have it. You can also use it as a filter.
Yeah. And for the mint, I don't know if you're going to introduce the apple mint
is your plant.
Okay, so you were talking about minty flavors and things like this. I mean, now in spring, here where I live and around, when you are having a walk, taking a walk in the mountain and things like this, I mean, next to the paths, there's a lot of apple mint, a lot. And is really fragrant and really nice to dry, easy, and to make tea is amazing. But also I like to use it to brew imperial stouts or something kind of porterish. But and I add it in fermentation only. But it's too powerful. I mean, this one you need to add really a hint of it, because if you overdose it, you will need to wait 4 months. So this kind of mellows a bit. But I mean, last time that I used it, it was a imperial stout. I pump up the IBU till 75 with the idea of keeping it maturing for 5 months. So I added a little bit of spicy and this apple mint. And after 5 years, that thing was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it's, if you go for minty, apple mint is really good, and now in the spring is full of them.
Yeah, the thing is, you also need to keep in mind, in my case, I haven't seen very much wild mint here, but mint essentially is an invasive plant. If you have it in your garden, will spread easily. So the thing is, depending on where you live, you might have very much, or in my case,
not at all.
I haven't found anything yet.
Yeah. No, they're really different. I mean, this one doesn't look a lot like normal mint. I mean, it's apple mint that has the leaves like much more round, with small hairs, like looks like a very silky, but it dries really quickly and boof, really at home I always have. Not for brewing, of course, but for making a tea. But for brewing, it's really interesting. Really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So two other stuff that I had chosen Well, one I would consider a bit of experimental, but we can also talk about this topic because Topinambur, Helianthus tuberosus, which is might be a substitute for, or a starch source, because which would also be gluten-free. The thing is, you can easily distill Topinambur. You just need to prepare it differently than you would normally for a beer. You can just put it in the mash and then hope that it is going to work, because if I'm not mistaken, Topinambur has mostly inulin, which is another kind of carbohydrate that you need to acidify before then you can use it like a starch component. But the thing is, you can use it, and it is a winter to spring plant, because you can, well, essentially you can also get it year round, depending on when you know where to buy it. So this is something that you can also keep in mind, depending on what season we are in. Some of the fruits you might use, you might not use, for example, for sugar or flavor. You can also use them for starch. So, and the last one, I think this is going to be quite controversial, would be dill, Anatum graveolens, because, dill is normally more of a spice, but there is a precedence that you can do a beer with it, which would be the Gurkenkaiser from Schneeäule, because this one has dill flowers in it, which, essentially the base style would be Berliner Weiss. So, and when I started research about this, I also found several articles in various homebrewing forums about pickle beers, where they essentially use dill flavored water. I think I also found a recipe for dill gose. But the thing is, here you also need to keep in mind, if you use the flowers, you get more of the aroma. If you use the leaves, you also get more of the more vegetable flavors. So more green flavors. But this is also something that you can easily experiment with, because you can get it anywhere. You can either get it as a live plant from your local gardener. You can get it as a spice from your local supermarket. So it's easily attainable. It packs a lot of punch. And, well, you can try and experiment with it. And I would say you can go really nuts with it.
Well, the beer, I have brewed several sour beers, like Berliner Weisse with pickles containing dill. And they're amazing. I mean, this pinch of salt, extra pinch of salt for a gose, for example, is great. And someone would say, come on, pickles, how? But really taste it. It's really amazing. And okay, dill is going wild now because it's fully growing when spring kicks in. Also fennel. Fennel is very similar in looks, but totally more anise-like. I mean, and now you don't have the seeds on the flowers yet, but we will talk about this when
the respective season comes. Yeah, so that would be my plants, which you can easily get in Germany. I chose to omit the red clover because, as we talked about during the preparation for the show, you mostly use it for flowers. So the leaves, it is sprouting right now, but the flowers you get in summer. Yeah. Freshly picked now?
No, picked in summer in Latvia, but then I still have some for tea. Yeah.
Well, this was actually one of the main problems when we brainstormed for the show. What do you choose? Because, for example, in our cases, it is very different. And depending on where you live, it might be even more different. So we chose to, we chose to talk about plants that we know, where we already know, okay, they might impart something into your beer. And which we consider safe. So, because you can't mix them up too much. So, but yes, that would be my plants for Germany. So, your turn.
So, I went with dandelion, right? I mean, yarrow, apple mint. Now I have something a little bit different because apple mint, I choose it for flavor, obviously, and for taste. Dandelion, the same, flavor and taste. And a little bit of color if you add the... the roots, like roasted roots. Yarrow, the same. Bitterness also, yeah, bitterness, some taste and some aroma. But now it's something different because, I mean, you are getting it now in spring, but comes from last year. This is like a rose hips. This is Rosa Canina. You have always seen that. And now, in the plants, probably is spring, but you can even found the ones from last year. What I do is like I take them and then I put them in a jar like this. This has been 1 year closed. So now I open it and they have fermented. I have in the, I put them inside like a little bit with moisture. So if I try to open this, oof, it smells amazing. This is how they look. They look totally black. And then you can smash it like this. And it would be an ingredient that is cool also to harvest now, even though it can be considered out of season. And yeah, this imparts a lot of color, red color, and some really flowery, like rose, of course, and a little bit of tannins. Now this is inspired, and also a little bit of sugars, if it's sweet. There is one kind of non-alcoholic beer that comes from Chechnya originally, but is brewed nowadays also in some parts of Georgia. It's called Kisturi beer. And basically it's boiling these ones on the wort for a long time. I mean, if there's one thing that we haven't mentioned, is like the harder the material you want to use, the more you need to boil it to extract the things you want. Yeah, the flowers, obviously, you want to keep the aroma. You just like add them at the cow, or put them in a tincture, or even like give a boost with some heat. But at this one, you need to boil.
Because I actually had to look this up when we were talking about it, because I didn't know what Rosa Canina was. In German is Hundsrose, or the common Hagebutte, which you can also use for a tea.
Tea is awesome, but you need to boil it. I mean, it's like you need to step. You will see that the color totally changes to some orange, really intense orange, and you can even use the same rose hips for several times. I mean, you are gonna get extracting stuff. You can do some jams as well. It's very popular to do jam with it, but has a lot of hair inside that makes it really tedious work. But this is one ingredient that I also like. But keep in mind that you need to have a really sweet wort, because this is gonna be a little bit too much. So to counteract this, use kind of a high OG probably, or even try whatever you want. But I mean, I recommend something like a little bit more in the sweet side, and then you can add these ones. Yeah, and then my last one, I don't remember which one it was.
You had several others, because we were also talking about flowers, for example, hibiscus.
Yeah. Okay.
And also mellow flowers.
Yeah, mellow flowers. Yes, I just have some. I remember. Yeah, I remember. These ones, I took them last week. Those are mellow flowers. I usually use them for tea. They are also can give a little bit of astringency and a little bit of color. For brewing, this is not commonly used. It's more like botanical ingredient to give an extra stuff. But you can get the same taste using another herbs. What I find interesting, because of the context, is one traditional brewing ingredient that is typical or thought typical from Scotland, because it's one of the national emblems, which is the thistle. This is thistle flowers. Now you have a lot in spring. So I went foraging and I took some of them, because my idea was to brew a Scottish ale with heather. Heather is also a traditional ingredient in traditional brewing in Northern Europe. But now also starts to have some flowers. So you can take and brew with heather and thistle, and then you can make a truly Scottish, like a beer, with some context to explain. These flowers mainly deliver some astringency and bitterness. That's why they were used in brewing when hops were not so common. And we have tons of things more, but this one.
You have two more on your list.
Yeah.
So the thing is, one thing that you have left out, but we have already mentioned, So at least we have mentioned the three would be oak leaves, because then now you can use them fresh. And also pine cones, because you already have fresh pine cones.
Yeah, I have them in, the other room, like soaked in room for already 2 months here. And
yeah, definitely.
This is you open the jar and it's already, you can feel a bunch of piney and a lot of stuff. I'm not, I will use it in a high ABV, some kind of even a West Coast IPA. It could go really good with Cascades or some kind of Centennials and hops. Very classical, but it could boost a little bit the piney character of this.
Yeah, and of course, oak leaves are mostly going to add tannins, so more bitterness. But nevertheless, now is the time to pick them fresh. And, well, I'll have to look if I can find some pine cones, because also I found several recipes there. And also it's supposed to, for example, be a traditional cough remedy. And, well, but it sounds interesting, so I would like to try that.
Yeah. And even before I forget, I mean, if you forage the oak leaves, I recommend you to put it in the freezer. You will see that the smell is totally different. I mean, it gets some kind of citrusy and something like this. So you can play with the leaves, or adding it at the beginning of the boil, or even steeping them at the end. But yeah, the aroma, I was surprised first time I did it. I was thinking, what? Is this coming from the oak leaves? And then it was the only, really cool.
So, as I said, this is something where we just wanted to take the opportunity to remind you, hey, you're surrounded by a world of ingredients. Go around and play. Not everything might work out, but you'll have fun trying it. Even if you decide to dump the batch.
Yes, I mean, I can't tell you the amount of batch I have dumped trying these things. I mean, one thing we didn't mention, you can use all of them. All the plants we have mentioned today, you can build a recipe thinking of which ones will go good for delivering bitterness, which ones for aroma, and which ones for kind of in the cold side and the fermenter. You can build a group really interesting with the ones that we have talked today. If I can suggest some idea, what I would do is dandelion leaves or oak leaves with bark at the beginning of the boil. Then 30 minutes boil, you can start adding some rose hips. Then at the end of the boil, you can use some dandelion flowers and even yarrow flowers. And then at fermentation, I would add the pine cones in the tincture with some vodka or with some rum. And then you will understand how these tempos are delivering these different things that you wanted to achieve. And then you have a proper grout. It will go sour. Well, I will recommend you to use some purified culture. Don't use something like a very farmhouse that it can be with some lacto or some pedio, that sometimes I'm using that. But if you use kind of USO5, because it's very neutral, you will be able to evaluate all of these nuances.
So you wouldn't immediately try with a Belgian Abbey yeast where that has intense yeast flavors. It might benefit from it. It might benefit from them. But if you want to establish what you get out of your ingredients, of course you would go better with the neutral yeast first.
This is a cool idea. Actually, you can split the batch and try different yeasts. So then you will understand which one the best, and then you will have more fun trying it and then trying to evaluate these I like, these I don't like. So yeah, probably we will dump 2 out of 3 and then one will be the winner. So or no, I'm joking. But
yeah, but of course that is what we totally, well, where we kind of lost track of the bigger picture. Of course, the most traditional thing to do would be a group beer. You build up your ingredient portfolio, and then you decide on which, where, what.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you get a ready-made root mix at the end of all.
That would be a good thing to think about for next episode. I mean, now you have a suggestion for a group beer based on spring. And then you, if you are selling your beer or something like this, that could be a really cool approach to have your groot of spring and the groot of summer and that, and then all year round groot.
So now we already have another idea for the next seasonal primer of summer. And well, let's see. Of course, the best thing would be to put it out at the beginning of the season. Here I also need to establish, because I think it makes more sense to use the botanical summer as a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the meteorological, because of course we will have some shifting there, but we want to put this out when there's actually the plants out that you can use. But keep in mind, in some cases you have to be very fast.
Yes. Totally, because you're not the only one in the forest that wants that.
And also limited time frame, depending on what you want to get. Because some of the stuff only flowers very, very shortly,
mm-hmm.
or for a very limited time.
Okay, I wanted to add just like everything that we talked about. We took it mainly also from, at least me, from the book. If some of you have the book or something, like feel free to explore, because I wrote it, like I put it there, like having the proper time to think about all the stuff. So it's very tidy. But everything we have evaluated today, mostly you can find it there, like much more structured, and follow the recipe with even which water profile will enhance this kind of herbal thing, which is important as well. So yeah, there are a lot of energies put in there. Yeah, I totally think that it's worth it for creativity in brewing.
So also, it pairs very well with the Homebrewers Almanac, because there you also have a very detailed approach on how you use what, also at what stage. It also is like, arranged in seasons. The only thing that sometimes is a bit difficult is that it's mostly American plants. So they differ a bit from the ones in Europe. So this is something you have to keep in mind, but it's the same when you go foraging for juniper, because Norwegian juniper is mostly of one kind, whereas in Middle Europe or other parts of Europe, you can also get poisonous juniper. So this ties very well into the disclaimer from the very beginning. Only use what you can safely identify and stay safe. So just a simple reminder.
Yes, a simple reminder. There is also another book that is called Brewing Local. Now I don't remember, I know the name of the guy, but he's referencing all the time, Marika and Aaron from Scratch Brewing. So he's influenced clearly for this. For them, but and it talks how in America was changing a little bit, how every brewery was trying to own every brewery, no, but a lot of breweries, the trend was to own a little bit of plot of land, and then they plant their own things or use like a proximity like ingredients. And another book that is not like a really famous, but I found it really interesting as well for IPAs, is called, one sec, sorry, I have it here, but I don't know where. Eclectic IPA. It's not bad. It's not bad. I mean, when suggesting different kind of creative ingredients or more botanical ingredients, but exclusively more focused in IPAs. But it's a good reference as well.
All right. Cool. So now we have some reading material for you as well. So of course, I would recommend getting yourself a plant guide. So you can, this will help you safely identifying plants, and also you get an idea what is growing where. All right. So, well, stuff to think about. We have work to do. Summer is almost upon us. So, yeah, well, the thing is, as I said, it is going to be 4 shows. This is the first one. We, of course, are going to have summer, fall, and winter as well. So I must admit I dread fall a bit, because this is going to be very, very many opportunities. Not only there's going to be a lot of fruits, but also a lot of mushrooms. So this is like the one, this is the one I'm dreading a bit. Yeah, but the thing is, and I think I can speak for the both of us, we had fun doing this, and it really is a fun thing to do when you think, when you're thinking outside the box. And yeah, well, you, it helps you getting to know your environment a bit better. It gets you out in the it gets you out in the nature. You find your spots where you can forage certain stuff. Then you find other spots where you can forage certain stuff. And then thinking about what to do with it, this is the fun part. Finding it is already fun, but then thinking about what to do and explore what it can bring to your beverage or meal or whatnot, this is also the fun part. So
I'm working with, I mean, lasting, I mean, and I, yeah, because it's like, come on, it's like important thing, right? It's, I mean, at the same time that you are searching info about that plant or learning a little bit botanically what they can deliver, you will see that also you will step into traditional medicine, folk medicine, or traditional brewing ingredients. So it's not only like we are randomly selecting things. It's like a lot of them comes from historically, from medicine or from brewing or for both. I mean, dandelion was used for diuretic purposes. Achillea, like yarrow, was used for helminths and some parasites in the gut. I mean, all of this is traditional medicine. But remember also that when you mix it with alcohol, these properties not necessarily are like kept, or they can be modified. For example, there are ingredients that if you boil them, they will help to volatilize some of the, some substances that can be a little bit dangerous for you, or they will upset the stomach. That's the case, for example, of Mirica Gale or Pors traditionally. But on the other side, on the other hand, if you step it and turn off the heat, the profile will change, and then you don't volatilize these, and then you get different compounds from the same herb or the same plant or the same tree. So yeah, keep it in mind as well. I mean, the same ingredient could act differently also depending on the boiling time.
So fun fact, when I was researching for this particular episode, I went to my local bookshop to get a plant guide. And I was looking, well, my book, the guy from the bookshop, he's very good. He has loads of experience. He's very good at recommending stuff. And at one point when I was going to the pile that he had selected for me, I found this one, which was about traditional herbs. And it was in old German. I was very, very hard. I was intensely considering whether I should take it or not, because I would have needed to understand this kind of German first, because it was very, very old. So I would have had to understand the German and then find out, okay, now I can use this. The thing is, but this, it was so weird. I just considered, okay, at a later point, not right now.
So researching this is like it's a lot. I mean, yes, okay.
Yeah, it can get wild.
No, but I just remember one book that I had from Latvia when it was like Germany kind of occupied the place, and then it was written in mix of German and Latvian and these letters, like, it was, first of all, it was impossible to read, and second of all, it was impossible to recognize that the words were in Latvian mixed with German, and that was a nightmare. I mean, to get some info from there, I needed to use all my friends and colleagues from Latvia to try to help me to get it like right, and also not from only one, like asking different ones to then put the info together and check that it was true or not. So it is a lot of work to check all of this, but it's really nice and interesting to do that. But no, thank you for giving the opportunity to share all of this with people that may hear or see the podcast.
Yeah, of course. Well, the thing is, I thought this would be something we would both enjoy, not only researching, but also spreading. So thank you for being on the show. And well, the thing is, I think the very last thing to say is, well, have fun researching, exploring, but stay safe. So with that, I say, as always, stay thirsty and ciao.
Das aktuelle Bierstudio wird von Dr. Philipp Deiber produziert und aufgenommen und ist lizenziert unter den Creative Commons BY-NC 4.0. Das heißt, ihr dürft das Werk bzw. den Inhalt vervielfältigen, verbreiten und öffentlich zugänglich machen bei folgenden Bedingungen. Ihr nennt den Namen des Podcasts, das aktuelle Bierstudio, und es gibt keine kommerzielle Nutzung.